Welcome to the Ultimate Soulmate Summit, brought to you by The Soulmate Secret and the Calling in the One online course with your hosts, Arielle Ford and Claire Zammit. Today's Soulmate Seminar is with Christian Carter on the topic, The Keys to Natural and Lasting Attraction, What Every Woman Needs to Know About How to Authentically Attract the Man and Soulmate of Her Dreams. Christian Carter is a globally acclaimed dating relationship expert and author of the top-selling ebook, Catch Him and Keep Him, A Woman's Guide to Finding Mr. Right and Keeping Him Hooked for Good. Christian has taught thousands of women how to go inside the mind of man and gain the insight they need to find, date, and create long-lasting relationships with their ultimate Mr. Right.
So welcome, everyone, to the Ultimate Soulmate Summit. I'm Claire Zammit.
And I'm Arielle Ford.
And we are thrilled to be here today with our relationship expert, Christian Carter. He is author of the top-selling ebook, Catch Him and Keep Him, A Woman's Guide to Finding Mr. Right and Keeping Him Hooked for Good. Now, Arielle, don't you think that's kind of what we want to do, even though we might not want to admit it?
Yeah, no, we certainly don't want to catch and release. But Christian, where did you come up with this catch him and keep him tagline?
Well, great question. And to be really honest, one of the things I think that's true about relationships is there's a lot about yourself that you want to share with people, and sometimes it's hard to get them to notice you or to notice those things right away. So sometimes it's not a bad idea to find language that people really identify with or would see as a bright, shiny object. So one of the things I really aim to do with my book is attract a larger audience of women with some of that bright, shiny language, and then really allow that to grab their attention, but then also give them a message that's maybe a bit deeper than just that bright, shiny object. So a lot of times in our lives, there's things that we think that we want and that are good for us and would make us feel good. But then oftentimes there's the other things that we really need, the things that will really fill our souls. And so I found it in working with people and talking with people that a lot of times it's great to walk that balance, if you can do it in a respectful way, is lead them a little bit with the things that they feel that they want and then give them a little bit more of what they need.
So, Christian, you've worked with thousands of women from around the world, helping them to really understand what men are looking for and how to attract a soulmate into their lives. What do you see are the major inner challenges that women have to being able to attract and sustain a relationship with the right person, and how might they overcome them?
Well, that's a great question. I think at maybe one of the deepest levels that you could go to, I really seek to help women understand that as much as men might be different, as much as they might have their own unique quirks, their own challenges, their own tastes, their own ingrained natural ways of being that might be different from women, what's really most important about men at the end of the day is how much they're similar to women. And by that I mean how human they are. So all of us humans have the same basic wants and needs. And those are really things that include feeling secure, feeling significant, feeling like we make a difference, feeling like a good person, feeling love, and feeling like we have a certain easy affiliation and relationship to the people around us and that we have their respect. So what I encourage women to do is to really take a moment and shift from the place of thinking or analyzing what's going on with this man or what is different about men or what's wrong with men, and really take a minute and step back for that and say, wait, hold on. While there might be these other layers of what's unique about men, at the root of that, what's really driving everything that might look different on the surface is really all about the exact same stuff that I go through. And I find that when that message can really be driven home, it really builds a different level of compassion and ability to love. And that's really at the root of attracting a great mate, is being that person who fills your space, fills the room with that compassion and love naturally. And until you can really have that level of compassion or acceptance for the human beings around you, often hard to really have people see that glow about you. But I find that it's very contagious and very infectious for women who really carry that. So I would say that's one of the most significant things about what's in women's way, is really not having that compassion or that love for men as human beings in their own way.
Oh, I love that. It's like, you know, stop objectifying them and and really, you know, open your arms wide and love them for the beings that they are. What are some of the triggers to gain a man's affection and attraction?
Great question. Well, if you want to dive into some of the really meaty, great stuff, we can do that right away. So I actually have a program that I've created that's called Natural and Lasting Attraction. And I really created it to kind of dispel some of the myths of all the funny things that women might think of to try or do to get a man's attention or to win his interest, that are often really short-term, and really get to the things that are at the heart of why and how a man actually falls in love with a woman. And, you know, in general, I really talk about two different types of attraction. There's the physical attraction that we all know about, which is really a man can actually see a woman and within a split second say, wow, look at her, I really need to know her or to have her in my life. But if, as we all know, that's not the significant longer-term type of attraction that's built in that moment. It sure can be a great step towards that, but it certainly doesn't guarantee that. So there's a deeper level of attraction going on here. But what is that attraction? I really call that emotional attraction, and it has a lot more to do with the experience that a man continually has when he spends time around you. What is the actual emotional feeling and state that he gets in when he spends time with you? And because of that, what are his expectations about what his life would be, what his future would be, and the quality of his life and experience in the future if he imagined himself with you? So this is one of the things that I really try and show women is, yes, there's all kinds of great things you can do by looking sexy and attractive and feeling beautiful, but it's really the emotional experience and connection that you create that really tells a man the quality of life he can have with you or not. So one of the things in my program that I've created are really six keys to building what I think of as lasting attraction. And I'd be happy to share those with you. But I'm also curious to know, what are some of the things that you think are the common strategies that women use to try and create attraction that maybe don't work so well? So maybe we could throw a couple of those out right now.
Breast implants?
Do you have any of those?
Well, gosh, I'm thinking back to all the things that I used to do, like trying to figure out, you know, who I needed to be to get love. That's a common one.
Of course, and then there's the saying we grew up in from our mothers, that the way to a man's heart is through his stomach.
Oh, and another one is like, just, you know, get him to just talk about himself, dear, and he'll think you're very interesting.
Right.
Well, those are great examples. And I think most women have found while that will create some level of maybe connection in that moment, they're not necessarily going to build this higher type of commitment or feeling in a man for, this is a unique and rare woman and no other woman could make me feel this way. So some of the keys that I put together are really the things at the core of that. So the first two relate to each other, so I'll share them together, which are predictability and unpredictability. So predictability is really fascinating as a trigger for attraction, because as human beings, we have a huge amount of value for the things that can be consistent in our lives, the things that we can expect to make us feel great, the things that we can count on and that we know are going to be there for us. So for a man, strangely enough, I think this doesn't occur. It's even a bit counterintuitive to a woman. The more predictable a woman can be in the way that a man feels when he's around her, if there's a calm or a loving or a soothing feeling, and he constantly builds the expectation in his mind that, whenever I'm around this woman, I feel this great wave of love or of affection or of passion, that level of predictability builds a really important piece of the foundation for a man as a human to really sink himself into love with a woman, to allow himself to fall more deeply, and gives him the confidence that he's safe in that place and that a woman won't do anything with his love or his affection that will be hard for him, that will challenge him. So I'm curious for you, do you see men, do you know men in your lives that you see have roller coaster experiences with the women that they fall in love with or that they date?
Well, certainly there are the high maintenance women that are like, tornadoes. Their emotions are up and down, and you never know what you're going to get with them. And I know it's hard for me to be around people like that, so I would imagine if you're dating somebody like that, unless you grew up with a mom like that, that might be kind of a turnoff.
Sure. So, you know, you touched on something really important there, which at essence I think is really men, and I don't want to go too much on the fear angle, but they have a subtle fear and an unconscious fear a lot of times that being around a woman will create some type of emotional experience or do something in their lives that will threaten their quote-unquote stable, easygoing, you know, nothing has to bother me, nothing's a big deal existence. And while that's not true for most men's lives, they sometimes project that or worry about a certain woman creating that in our lives, making life more difficult. And so while this isn't a conscious or rational thought process for men, sometimes a lack of predictability in the way that a relationship is emotionally can really lead a man to pulling away or keeping a certain distance. So predictability is a really important key to create in the way that you connect with your partner, to connect with a man that allows him to fall deeply. So now I want to try and force your brain to think a little harder with how the second key can actually be the opposite of this, which is unpredictability. So if I'm saying to you, predictability is very important. How could it be also be true that creating a level of unpredictability could be true? Well, the truth is humans have fairly complicated ways of relating that have evolved over time and that are really nuanced and beautiful. That's why we can have such amazing, rich experiences in life. And we can actually like different things at different times. So creating a level of unpredictability in your relationship can actually spark this level of excitement and of ongoing passion and of ongoing joy, looking forward to the future. And for a man to fall in love and really commit himself to a woman, I believe that men really have this inner voice that says to them about a woman that they fall in love with, wow, I don't know what's coming next, but I can't wait to experience it, and I know this is the person that I want to experience it with. And unpredictability is really the key to creating that. So creating this level of unpredictability, I think when you first start thinking about it, can be a little difficult, or maybe it seems like a strategy that you wouldn't know how to do. But a lot of us do it naturally in our lives anyways, especially when we have friendships. So I think that's a great model for understanding unpredictability is, you know, if you had a great friend and you got together two or three times a week, do you go to the exact same restaurant all the time? Do you go home and meet at the exact same time at 8 p.m., have this similar conversation, and do a lot of the same stuff? No, oftentimes you don't. Sometimes in our busy lives that happens. But in a friendship, it's very easy to switch those things up, and we don't develop one thing that's important that oftentimes we do develop in relationships, which is this kind of assumption of what things should be or what we're going to be doing. In friendships, it's often really easy to say, hey, let's go do this, or to plan something new, or to go out on an exciting adventure together. And oftentimes relationships lose a little bit of that passion or joy or breaking out of the mold. So one of the things that I find keeps men really deeply engaged with a woman is when there's not a constant engraving of that routine with each other, that together they find a way to break out of that. And that's very, very, very exciting to a man to experience that and to really have a woman who's bringing him into new experiences. And I'd maybe even go a level deeper with men to say that on some level, a lot of men's lives aren't that varied or rich socially, especially hardworking men, very successful or powerful men. Oftentimes, they do have a lot of routine in their lives already. And so I would suggest on some level that a relationship and love and a woman in a man's life is a connection to life force. It's a connection to creativity. It's a connection to things that he's not in touch with. And it's a connection to the feminine that he doesn't have in his own life. And so this level of unpredictability really represents life to a man. It represents passion. It represents change and newness. And a lot of times this can feel like a challenge to a man at the same time, but oftentimes men are really engaged through that and called to that challenge. And it involves them and engrosses their attention in the relationship and in love and causes them to be a much better partner.
Wow. So that's a really great distinction in terms of the predictability and the unpredictability. So with the predictability, it's like we want to be emotionally consistent. We want to do what we need to do to take care of ourselves so that we can be that constant, steady presence. It's not going to be like, you know, whichever way the wind blows, he doesn't know who you're going to be on that day. But at the same time, you bringing forth new things into his life. I mean, I'm just thinking with my husband, I love taking him new places to, you know, new restaurants and, you know, to have new experiences and, you know, crew ballroom dancing lessons or something like that. It's like, you know, but they're great examples, I think, of what you're talking about in terms of really bringing that enrichment of the new into the relationship.
Well, and those are great points. And as you're saying that, it becomes clear to me an easier way to communicate this, and something that's really important for women to understand, is this isn't a function of trying to be in a relationship and then present or become these, although they're helpful to be conscious of and to work to find good ways to improve your relationship. But they're also a function of the life that you create for yourself. How come you can't be a person who creates healthy predictability and routine in your life that allows you to have consistency and to stay energized and to meet your own needs, and then also plan for having unpredictability in your life that brings fun and excitement and adventure? And that's a woman who has these things in her life already that really spell an amazingly attractive, interesting, fun mate for a man, and the kind of woman that a man would know he would lose a significant portion of his life if he lost this woman from his life.
Yeah, so we want to bring the fun and excitement without the hurricanes and the storms. Christian,
key number three. Key number three.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
So the third key to what I call natural and lasting attraction is something that I really consider a great choice in life. And by choice, I'll explain what I mean by that. As we go through our lives on a daily basis, there's a lot of things that are up to us to create, that are up to us to say, how do I want this day to go? And they're up to us to say, how do I want to treat and respond to the things that happen around me or to me during the day? And becoming conscious of that being a choice in your life is extremely powerful to allow you to create whatever it is that you're looking to create in the world. And in relationships, one of the things that I find is a really powerful choice is to choose playfulness in your relationship rather than cultivating or choosing too much seriousness or too much intensity. And don't get me wrong, I really feel that intensity in a relationship is a beautiful thing. In fact, I consider myself a pretty intense person, and maybe this is why I've cultivated or been more conscious of this idea of playfulness. But certainly for women and for men, there's a choice in your relationship when you're faced with, let's say, a conversation that you might feel – or have feelings that your needs aren't being met, or that your partner doesn't really see you, they're not appreciating you in the right way. One of the choices or commitments I think is important to make in a relationship is not only to be honest and to love your partner and to commit to them and to see them for who they are, but to also find a way to choose to create a better life together and not be at odds against each other in your partnership, but actually work together to choose to support each other like you would a team. And so playfulness is a great choice when issues, when anything comes up in your relationship, to choose to find a playful way to engage around it rather than to find a way to have a lot of intensity or to be at odds. And this is sometimes difficult, I think, for some women to understand or to get to or to want to do, because I think there's a challenge to say, well, I have my feelings, and they certainly don't feel playful, and I really need to share them, so I need to share them honestly. And I think that's important, but one of the things that we do as individuals to be loving to our partner is to find a mature way to consider and have that pause around our feelings and to take some level of responsibility for what we're feeling. And then it's also our choice how to communicate that. And that communication and that pause are loving, very loving choices for our partner. So if there are, let's say, wounds that I'm carrying around, or there's beliefs that I have about the world or about my partner or about what's happening to me that are telling me that I'm in a dangerous place or that I'm being wronged, that might or might not be true. But if I, as a choice, choose to communicate to my partner in a way that shows them trust, that shows them respect, that shows them that I want to believe that they're a great partner or that I still recognize that they're a great partner, that's a very loving choice. And most importantly, that begets more love in my life if I choose to communicate that way, rather than choosing to communicate maybe the lowest level of intensity or the deepest pain associated with that. What if I communicated and reassured my partner that I also remember that I love them or that they love me at the same time?
Mm-hmm. So what's number four?
Number four, it really relates to what I was just talking about in the choice of playfulness, but it's the other side that I want to speak to about your feelings. And a lot of women I see run into a challenge in their lives, but also a very beautiful growth opportunity. To figure out how to be very honest and clear and present with their own feelings. And so key number four is really what I call living your truth. And this is really a phrase that I've gotten from meeting, knowing, and understanding so much more about women in their lives and how important it is to share their feelings and to feel like someone sees and appreciates and respects what they're going through. And I want to put an important understanding around what your feelings are to begin with, which I think gives you the level of consciousness and awareness to really get to a place of what I would call in a relationship emotional maturity around your feelings. So what are feelings and how do we share them? Well, feelings are interesting because they're really a function of the things that we believe to be true about ourselves or about the world around us or about other people. And so at the root of feelings are actually our own beliefs. And amazingly enough, oftentimes we get tricked into or we learn beliefs that aren't exactly true about the world. So a few simple examples might be, well, you know, I didn't grow up in a successful family, or my family wasn't wealthy, so you know, I'll never have the kind of freedom or wealth that I would want in my life. That's a very deep-rooted false belief for a lot of people who haven't grown up, quote-unquote, successful or with money. Money is an area of life that a lot of people have a lot of challenges and deep-rooted beliefs that they're not that conscious of. Well, the same is true about love and relationships. A lot of us have deep-rooted beliefs we really haven't identified that are running our lives, in a manner of speaking, because our beliefs are the things that cause our feelings to happen. And And our feelings are the things that really drive our behavior. And our behavior are the things that really affect the people around us and shape the way that they respond to and see us and how they treat us back. So in order to live your truth and really get to your feelings, I'm very passionate about the idea that you have to start to get in touch with what those beliefs are. And the beautiful thing about life and about us as human beings is we have the power to reshape those things if we don't like some of our beliefs, or if they're holding us back, or if they're limiting us, or if they're causing us to act towards people that we love in ways that don't seem so loving. So one of the exercises I really like to share is how to identify some of these limiting beliefs and then how to kind of disconnect them from your life so that you can redefine that for yourself. And I would say that's the very essence of personal power and awareness, is starting to identify the unconscious things in your life that are driving how you feel and are driving your behavior. Now, did you have a question?
Yeah, I was just going to say, would you be willing to share one of those exercises with us?
Sure, absolutely. So I would really call the exercise identifying a limiting belief. And so in order to identify it, what I would want you to do is to think of, I think it would be most helpful if we do a really relevant exercise, to identify a belief about men. There's all kinds of beliefs and statements and quote-unquote truth or myths out there about who men are and how they act in love and in relationships. So let's throw out a couple and see if there's some common ones that we might pick apart or take a look at in this exercise. So I'll throw out a common one. Men won't commit. There's a very common belief or myth. What's another one?
Men are somewhat lacking in capacity.
That's definitely one. Somewhat. I like that. It's very vague.
Well, they don't want to share their feelings.
Men don't want to share their feelings. Okay. Good. I think those are three really great ones. So why don't we take that one that men are somewhat lacking. So that's actually a belief that if you hold that, sits deeply in your mind and ultimately, as I explained, drives some of your feelings about how a man might be in a relationship with you and therefore drives your behavior. So the first thing to do is to really identify what that belief is, which we've done, and then to remove the what I would call the incorrect link of cause and effect around that belief, as in this leads to this. So an example in our example here would be as a cause, something's happened to you because a man isn't fully capable, isn't sharing his feelings. And the effect of that might be that when a man doesn't talk, it means that he doesn't care about me. So the thing that we want to do in this exercise is identify the cause and effect. The cause being a man isn't capable or doesn't share his feelings, and the effect of that we interpret and become our own personal belief about ourselves might be that, well, it's because a man doesn't care about me. That's the false linkage that we'll create from that belief, that because a man isn't capable or doesn't share, in our relationship, when he acts that way with me, it's because then I think he doesn't love or care about me. And that's false linkage. We've created that other belief in our mind about ourselves because we have a belief that suits it or it relates to it. And so it creates this whole reality for us. And in this exercise, the thing that's important to do is to identify that we've created that other secondary belief, that linkage to that original belief, and to dispel it. So if you get that feeling in your relationship with a man that, well, he doesn't love me and he doesn't care about me, can you identify that original belief and then break that linkage by understanding how it's also not true, how it's also not true that a man doesn't love you because he can't communicate, I would say it's actually really easy if you want to step back for a second and remember and recall all the loving things that a man has done for you, the reason that you actually have fallen in love with him, the reason why you care so much right now about what his actions are and if they're loving and if they're in integrity or if they're not. And that can bring back the belief and the understanding that you know that this man does love you. So which one is true? Well, that's the beauty, like I said, of our lives, is we can choose to follow and create the beliefs that we want to empower our lives with. So if we want to change that belief of a man doesn't love me because he's not communicating and turn that into maybe the new belief, which is he's having a challenge communicating with me and he needs help. That would be another belief to make about that. Does that give you a sense of how to reframe a limiting belief?
Yeah.
I think it does. Great.
So what's the fifth key?
The fifth key here, it's a great segue where we just left off. The fifth key is what I call teaching connection. So in our lives and in relationships, I talked about earlier about the choice of playfulness. Playfulness is a really great choice. But at the root of playfulness and the root of anything else you do to engage in loving communication or to share quality time with a man is really to choose to see them in a positive light and to open up and to share your love with that person. So I want to explain what I mean by connection by talking a little bit about what it's not and also some of the things that keep us from being really engaged and connected with our partner, because I think connection means a lot of different things to different people. So there's a great story about a man who's a salesman, and he has to go around this neighborhood and each week and try and sell in order to feed his family. And he's in a tough spot in his life, but he's really positive and he's really trying to make things work. And one day he goes to this house, knocks on the door opens, and he starts speaking to the man who lives in the house, and the man very quickly tells him that he's not interested. And the salesman, again, is washed over with failure. He's frustrated about his life and about his job. And the man in the house sees this, and he just looks at him, and he hands the man a $100 bill, and he says, "I really hope things turn around for you." And the salesman, so overjoyed with this show of compassion, and that this man saw in his eyes what was going on for him, and he's so joyed, he thanks the man, and he wants to give him something for free, but the man in the house won't accept it. And he says, "Please go on with your day and just take it and be grateful." And so the salesman does. But the next week again, he has to go around to all the houses. And he remembers this man. And he stops back by the house and he knocks on the door and he just wants to thank him. And he's forced to go back to this man's house and try and sell him something, and he doesn't want to. But the man comes to the door, and again, he sees the pain in the salesman's eyes, and he gives him $100. And the salesman's grateful, and he takes it, and he has a short conversation, and then they walk away. And then the next week again, the salesman is forced to go back to this man's house. And the man, unfortunately, doesn't have another $100 to give him, but he wants to speak to him. But the salesman's going through the worst week of his life then, and he's having a tough time. And he actually gets upset that he can't get the $100 from the man because he had started to use it to help his family out, and he had actually started depending on it a little bit. And I think this is a really powerful story, because a lot of times something that starts as a gift in our lives that we really accept and appreciate from someone just for the sake of giving and of generosity can in subtle ways turn into something that we feel entitled to or obligated for someone to give us. And in loving and intense and deep and beautiful relationships, there's a level of this that a lot of us or all of us experience, which is, I finally feel this love that I get from my partner. I finally feel this joy that I'm being filled up with because my partner is so generous and they see me and they tell me how beautiful I am. And then after a little time passes, maybe our partner isn't as vocal about those things, but they still show us and have acts of love and appreciation. But it feels like there's a little less. And suddenly we're to a place where we feel like our partner's obligated to do all those things that used to fill us up. And we start to feel like we don't have any of that in our own lives without our partner giving some of that to us. And so one of the things that I really think is so beautiful and important about a relationship is to both cherish and desire those gifts from your partner, but most importantly, to choose to give what you want to receive without the expectation of getting it back. To me, that is the highest or truest calling and expression of love, is to not have others obligated to give us love, but to seek to give it to them, knowing that that is the ultimate gift, and that that is the thing that creates the strongest bonds around love. Not obligation for us to receive love, but a commitment to giving it to our partner no matter what. And in a lot of ways, I think we're taught through experience that we have that are a little bit less, or where someone has turned on us, not shown us love ultimately, that we've gotten away from this idea that love is a choice to this commitment, not to feeling like our partner is obligated to love us, but that we're obligated to stay in a place of love ourselves and give. Mm. And so teaching connection, this is what I mean by teaching connection, that your relationship, if you want love, is a commitment to connecting with your partner in this way. If you want to create this amazing loving space, you want to feel that amazing loving space, that is the commitment that you should make for yourself, not for your partner, to share that level of love and connection, and you will experience it. That's the power and the beauty we have as creators of our own lives, is that if we choose love in the present moment, we will feel it. We will feel that. So I want to ask you guys a question. Have you ever had an experience in your life where you knew something was really hard for you and it was troubling, or you were angry at someone and you were filled with this feeling of frustration, but somehow, somewhere you found this space inside yourself where there was love, and suddenly you chose to express that or to remember that or to bring that to the conversation or to put that energy forward. And suddenly, not only were you filled with this loving feeling, rather than the frustration, but it shifted the space in which you and your partner were at. It dramatically changed how they were feeling towards you. It stopped their distance. It reconnected them to you. And it was all because of a choice that you made to reconnect with love for yourself, not to get it from your partner. That's the beauty and the power that we have to connect with ourselves and then to share that, to teach connection with our partner. Have you had that experience?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah, that's beautiful, Christian.
Thank you.
And what happens if you practice that in a relationship, and it's something that's very, very important, I've certainly seen from my own experience. But what happens if you are continually and consistently loving in that way and your partner doesn't reciprocate with the same generosity or extension of care? Should you just keep on loving them? Like, at what point is it? What point is it self-abandonment?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things I was really talking about was being the creator, and at the essence of choosing love and sharing that is a creative or is a powerful choice that you can create what you want in front of you. So I would say that the exact same thing exists, even though it sounds or feels more complicated because we're not used to it, to speak our truth and to speak in a loving way about exactly what you just mentioned. So oftentimes a woman won't feel powerful, she won't tap into love, and she'll come from a place of a lack of abundance or fear that her relationship is going away or fear that love is not going to be reciprocated, rather than becoming the creator of what she wants to create and saying that to her partner in love. You aren't reciprocating the communication and the love that I'm sharing here. And I want to experience this love, and I'm giving it to you because I love you, but I'm not getting it back, and I need to know what you're going to do about that. That is a more deeply honest, more powerful statement than any point you could ever make specifically about what a man said or did or didn't do. that you could ever make. You could talk all day about this or that, about his behavior. But that one single statement made from that choice of love and power will have a much more significant effect. And more importantly, it will cultivate and will bring out him a different level of honesty and of connection with you, for him to share what might really be going on, for him to answer in a space of love rather than just being defensive.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because you're not attacking him. You're just sharing what's true for you from a very vulnerable place.
Absolutely. So there's a couple things going on there to simplify it a little bit. That's a statement of communication that I just walked through that is free of blame, that's free of criticism, and is inviting of a loving response because it's given with love. So if you want a loving response from your partner, choose love in the way that you communicate it. If you don't want to be criticized or blamed and you want to feel appreciated, try and create a context of appreciation, of gratitude, and you will receive it back more often than not.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Well, now I feel like I'm a blatant optimist, but the cat's out of the bag already, I think. So the sixth key is what is called positive emotional override. And I'll get a little bit scientific here, but keep it short. There was an amazing study done by a scientist called John Gottman, and he has a place called the Gottman Institute at the University of Washington. And he did a surprisingly simple experiment that yielded some really fascinating, powerful results. His experiment was to invite couples in to talk about their daily lives, the things that they're going through, the chores that they have to do, how their work lives are going, and to do it in front of each other and to communicate with each other. And there was an interviewer when they were doing this to guide them through questions. Well, the thing that they did was they actually filmed these couples, and they filmed them talking about the everyday, simple, mundane things in their lives. These weren't all deep relationship questions about, does this person really love you? It wasn't therapy. It was a conversation. And they filmed this conversation. And what they did in the study was to review the film and start to study the language of how people communicated and responded to each other even during these simple everyday conversations. And they studied these things in slow motion to really identify the facial features, the tones of voice. And what they came up with was this really rich language and understanding of the variety of ways that people can both communicate with their partner and respond. And I'll share some of those more general ones and then get to my main point, which is, I think, the biggest aha that came from all this. First of all, people could generally turn towards their partner when they were saying something or responding, meaning that they would, in a sense, take their partner's side or support their partner in a conversation about who should be taking out the trash or did it not get taken out. Or, on the other hand, they can turn away from their partner. And they can make their partner someone not on their team and at odds with them. And this was a really important distinction. And then the other things that they found were what they thought of as the main keys for people turning away from each other, which were demand, criticism, blame, and withdrawal. I'll say them again. They're really, really important in communication. Demand, criticism, blame, and withdrawal. And these were generally what they identified as some of the main strategies that people used in communicating with their partner or responding to their partner that created a disconnection that led to more negative conversation and that was not constructive, loving, or helpful. So these were the most dangerous ways of communicating with your partner, using any of those four things. But here's where it became really, really, really fascinating in the study. They used all these things to then build a system where they wanted to guess which couples would stay together, which couples would continue to love each other and stay committed. And they were able to, through their study and what they put together in this language, to predict with 90% accuracy within the next year which couples would still be together and which couples would not. And they boiled all this complex stuff about communication, about body language, about communication styles and responses down to a couple of simple numbers. And this is where it becomes so positive. This is where it becomes so clear to me the power of our communication and the choices that we make. They boiled everything down to a simple ratio that if you have a minimum of 5 positive interactions with your partner, you choose to turn towards them other than away from, and avoid using those 4 critical pieces that create negative conversations and feelings. If you have a minimum of 5 positive interactions to 1 negative, then you'll have a relationship that's likely to continue and to stay loving. If you have anything less than that, you're almost certain to have a very challenging relationship. Now, if you have a really quote-unquote happy relationship, you have a ratio of about 30 positive interactions to 1 negative interaction. And so this is, I think, really profound. But a lot of us get away from the idea of just being conscious of how the subtle ways that we respond or talk to our partner, how much impact those really have on each other. So, for example, some of us might think that we're having a conversation about that we didn't pick up, our partner didn't pick up something that we needed them to pick up at the store. Well, it might be important to you that they did pick that up, but how do you treat them when you communicate that to them? That moment, that quality of that communication has everything to do with what your relationship actually is and will be in the future. It's not a simple conversation. It's a big piece, one piece of connection. And all of those pieces of connections collectively build your relationship. And I think at essence, those things boil down to a choice. Do you choose to turn towards and have a positive override, quote unquote, to the things that might even feel difficult with your partner and communicate in trust and appreciation and love? Or do you communicate from a place of blame or criticism or demand or withdrawal or something else, and you turn away from your partner and you put them at odds with you?
Mm-hmm. That's very, that's very, very insightful, Christian, because the impulse so often when we, kind of get upset or we kind of feel attacked, or it really is to turn away and recognizing that that's going to be the kiss of death,
yeah,
potential connections, really kind of gives us, encouragement to pause in those moments. And instead, I think, really deepen into what you were saying earlier, which is just this actual space to really make the choice to generate love and generate connection and generate affinity.
Yeah. And it's really important for me to share that I have a lot of understanding and compassion of how challenging and how difficult it could be when you do have this intense, overwhelming feeling that you're not being cherished, or that your partner hasn't even shown you an ounce of excitement or appreciation in days or hours or maybe even weeks. But that's where the choice becomes really important in your life. And you get to choose what kind of life it is you want to create and what you want to have more of around you. So while I understand when you have these feelings, the last thing you feel like is giving more, if you can make the shift from thinking that you would be giving yourself away or cheating your feelings by finding a positive or loving way to communicate them, even if they don't feel that way, and realize that the gift you're actually giving is to yourself, then you start to create such a richer experience in your life.
Mm-hmm. So much great wisdom in these keys. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Sure.
I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So, these are great practices for us to really be considering to work on in our process of preparing to meet the right person and create a relationship that's lasting and fulfilling. And one of the other things that, we often hear women ask us is, they're doing this inner work and inner preparation, but what are the outer actions they need to take? Where can they go to meet men? What's the best place that you've found that, women can actually meet the kind of men that they're looking for?
Sure. There's such a long list that it's hard to narrow down. I wish I could talk to everyone and individually find out what's unique about them and help them put them in a place where they would be in their own element and environment and feel engaged. And it's at that moment where we're engaged in their lives that simply a man observing you can attract him to you. because you're filled with what we were talking about earlier of this life force, of this energy, of this glow, this power. So there's so many places. You step outside your door, and there's human beings. Everyone's seen and looks to have a busy life. So the odds of running into one person who might, quote-unquote, be your soulmate, if you're at home a lot, or if you do the same four or five things each week, and you take the same route to work, and you hang out at the same restaurants with the same people, the odds of you coming across that other person who doesn't share that routine and those same places and people is really low.
Mm.
So my simplest advice is, whatever you've been doing, do other things. Meet other people and take a different route, because life is filled with adventures and people that are also beautiful and loving and looking to share a connection with someone. And this is really important piece. There's a lot of people who wish they had more people in their lives. There's a lot of people who feel, even though they have a rich, beautiful experience and life, they feel a little bit lonely. So if you can shift from feeling like you're not at cause in your life, that you're an effect of good things not being around you, that if only there was a place I could go, to then recognizing that you have the choice and the power to do something different, to find your own adventure, and that there are so many people outside. If you look out your window right now, if you were doing something different, you would come across them. If you were doing some type of exercise outside that you've never done before, not only might you look silly and someone would laugh at you, but you'd be around new people who you weren't with before. One of the simplest examples I'll give is, I'm lucky enough to live at this beautiful place on the beach in Santa Monica. And I, in my life, have really chosen to cultivate and find new men in my life that I could develop great friendships with. That's been important for me, to find a variety of different types of men to have a great relationship with. And that's partially because I haven't really had the male figures in my life that I've wanted. So I've really cultivated that, but it was hard for me to find a place where men would be hanging out. So to get rid of all the gay overtones here, for me, it was really finding quality friendships and men that I could admire and see how they lived their life, whether they were married, whether they were successful, and really get a sense for how other men were living. Well, one of the things I've chosen to do is find different places among the city where I know active, interesting guys would be. So an example, I wouldn't go down, there's on the beach here in Santa Monica, there's a great set of rings where people do these workouts, and it's acrobatic, and there's also this beautiful grass space where people stretch and do exercises. And there's actually a great little community down there of people who are there very often, and they're all very healthy people. They're super engaged in life. But it never was, quote-unquote, my scene, because I wasn't into acrobatics. I wasn't one of these people in my mind. However, when I put myself outside of the space of, well, that's not my place, and I just went down there and started spending a little bit of time there, suddenly that became part of my social network. Suddenly I became someone that someone would see every once in a while and go, oh, here's, there's that guy, and I developed friendships. And the only thing it took for me was a choice to do something different, slightly outside my routine, to meet a whole network of people. And now in my life, I have 12, 15 great people who I spend time with consistently every couple of weeks. And I would never have those friends had I not stepped out my door and thought about going somewhere new that maybe felt a tiny bit uncomfortable or different from who I am. So that's my best advice. Men are everywhere. They really are. I'm looking out my window right now, and I can see across an entire city. There's so many men out there, but you're not going to meet them in your apartment. You're going to meet them when you're engaged doing something unique and fun in your life. And the more fun you're having, the more you're going to easily and naturally have that person see you and see something unique or special about you and want to get to know you.
So Christian, we're going to make these changes. We're going to get outside our comfort zone. We're going to go where the men are. But what are the most common mistakes you see women making when they are dating?
Well, one, the belief or the myth in their mind that I shouldn't approach a man. Get rid of that completely, because it doesn't matter. We don't live in the 1950s anymore. Men are flattered and love a woman if they start a conversation. I'm not saying to hit on a man. I'm saying to begin a conversation with a man. And that's as simple as walking over, placing yourself next to them, and saying hi. Create opportunities for yourself, and you'll be amazed at what comes back to you if you just put a tiny bit of energy out there. So that's one of the biggest things. A lot of women think that, well, if I approach a man, that he'll think differently of me, and he'll approach dating with me differently. Not at all true, especially if you're not being overtly sexual with him, but you're presenting yourself personally to him. And I think there's a big distinction there. Not using your sexuality to start a conversation and to just create that physical attraction, but really try to create and invite him into what we were talking about earlier, that emotional dialogue, that emotional attraction. And if you're not inserting too much sexuality at the beginning of that conversation, then I think you have absolutely nothing to worry about, and it's all downside if you don't start a conversation with any man who looks interesting to you. Other mistakes that women make, I would say that they one of the big things is, how long should I wait to call? How come he didn't call? What does it mean? When you start dating someone, there's so many questions that won't be answered ever for you, and there's no right answer, and there's no way to get inside someone's head and read their mind. So if I could say anything, I would say try as much as possible not to get into the man's head about why he did or didn't do something when you know that you can't know it. And the reason this is important is, if you're filling your mind with a lot of positive things about him, if you're filling your mind with, well, he didn't call me because this is good and this and that, I would say go ahead and fill your mind with the ideas of who he is or what he's doing. But if you find that you turn on yourself and you fill your mind with negative thoughts about what he did or didn't do, or why he didn't call, or what that means, or more importantly, what it might mean about you, I would really, really want you to stop that processing and try and take notice of it, and stop telling yourself negative things about the man you just met that you don't know that well, and more importantly, about what it means about you. Because we all have a very critical voice, especially when we're not feeling loved or we're unsure if we are loved. So try to pay attention and be aware to that critical voice in your head, if it's telling you negative things about a man or about yourself. And try and think as much with your heart and your mind and about what you want to create, rather than the negative things that might or might not be. And that will shift. The reason this is important is not just for your own well-being and your thought process, but it's also important because if you've not received a call from a man in 3 or 4 days, and then he does call you and you pick up the phone, and you've been thinking about all these negative things and you've filled the space, you might or might not be right about the reasoning. But if you've been thinking all these negative things, he will most likely sense it when he gets on the phone with you. And then it becomes a reality, the negative things you've been thinking about, because he feels a disconnect or a space between you two. And I guarantee you, a man doesn't know why it's there, and oftentimes he doesn't know what to do about it, but he senses it and he feels it, and it has him stay more distant and feel a little bit less trust in what your connection could be. And he would be less likely oftentimes to continually or want to invest more energy and time in it if there's that feeling of, I don't know, all I did was call her, and now this already feels a little weird. So I would strongly encourage you to keep that critical voice in check. And what else can you tell yourself that's great, that's positive, while at the same time being the creator of your love life? So remember how I said you can also use this in a positive way to create what it is you do want. So if a man hasn't called and you've been dating him 2 months and he didn't call for 5 days or a week, and he didn't let you know that he was leaving town and you had anticipated having plans, how can then you communicate that from that space of more of what you want to create and be in touch with that feeling of love for yourself in order to have him feel that and reconnect with you in that context, not in a way of blame or demand. And that's going to go so far with a man for you.
Can you give us a little example of what that would sound like? So let's say, you know, you and I met and we went out on a date and you didn't call me for 8 days and you call and, you know, there's a part of me that's kind of like, you know, okay, what's the matter with you? And I'm trying to stay positive. It's, you know, would it be fair to say something like, you know, you are such a fun guy. I had so much fun with you. I actually found myself missing you. Or is there something better to say?
Sure. I think it's great. It's always great to compliment. But I think what we're talking about, too, is giving yourself the space and ability to communicate if there was something that happened that you didn't like. So if you can say, yes, I thought you were a really great guy. You know, the last time we hung out, I had an amazing time. To be honest, I haven't heard from you in a while, and I was just wondering if something happened or if there's something I need to know, and that's all. I was looking forward to having a great time with you some other time, but it seems like there's something else here. If that's what you're genuinely feeling and it's not just your critical voice, then feel free to say that. But don't say it in a way that accuses or blames him, because it triggers a lower level of honesty from people. And it becomes a blaming or a back and forth, rather than a genuine sharing and connection and conversation about what really might be going on in someone's life. So if a man hasn't called for 8 days, I think a lot of times it does indicate a lack of consideration or appreciation or sometimes interest, but it doesn't always have to be. And he might have had the most hectic 8 days of his life and he didn't reach out to call you. But what if you don't leave space for that to be an option in the way that you ask him about it? So if you say, I had a really great time with you and I was hoping to hear from you sooner, but I didn't, what's going on? Is anything happening? Do you want to share something with me? That is an open, great space for loving communication. And you've demonstrated trust and openness and love and support in that way of talking to him, rather than of blame or of just sharing a hurt feeling or of sharing uncertainty and expecting to hear something negative or bad.
I so wish I would have known you a long time ago, because I would dated this guy once and he was, you know, he'd go off on these business trips and he wouldn't call me, and then I would break up with him. He's like, he'd never understood why I was breaking up with him. And finally I said, okay, well, I'll get back together with you, but we have to sign a contract. He was a lawyer. So I drew up this contract, and the contract said that he had to call me at least once a day when he was out of town. I made him sign it. And then, of course, he went out of town, and he didn't call me. And when he did, I said, well, I'm breaking up with you. And he's like, but why? I said, because you broke the contract. He's like, oh, my God, I was 3 time zones away. I was in the middle of a trial. And, you know, in my juvenile mind, I was just like, but you didn't call me, and you signed a contract. Of course, it didn't last.
Oh, I had this experience where I had this one guy that I really had a deep and sweet connection with who never called. And he finally called me 10 years later, a couple of years ago, and just really did explain. Like, he really just, the connection that we felt was very real, and that he just wasn't ready for a deep relationship at the time. And so I think that it's great for us also, if it doesn't work out, to trust that, yeah, the connection we thought, it may have been real, but there are reasons that we can't know at the time as to why people aren't really ready, and to trust and to not make that mean anything about who we are.
Yeah, Claire, I can imagine. It sounds like the way that you were with him and the way you communicated with him did make him feel comfortable or gave him space to then finally say, oh, you know what, you're right, I haven't been calling you. Oh, and let me be more honest with you. Here's the reason why. And I had to reflect on it because I had the space to. And, unconsciously for him, he wasn't triggered to try and defend himself. He was invited into a space of sharing and of truth. And so it sounded like you gave him the space. Now, you don't want to run around and spend your life waiting for men and giving them space so that they can tell you that they don't have space for a relationship. But what is important about that is that you're inviting a deeper level of honesty when you choose to communicate this way. And that's, men will, believe it or not, even for all the beliefs that men don't share, men do love that feeling of being able to be more honest about what they're going through and who they are and where they're at in their life. And they will be honest about that if they're given the right environment and they feel safe. So men value safety and security in a lot of ways too. And the way you choose to handle or speak to them or present a situation when there's an unknown, like, why didn't you call,
mm-hmm.
is really a choice about whether they're going to feel like there's space to say that and it's safe or not. And I always choose, because I'm a huge believer in truth, that I would rather hear and elicit and try and get someone to be really honest with me, because even if it's not the answer I want to hear, ultimately I'm going to feel closer and more connected to them, and I'll have more understanding about what's real in my life and what's not. So
would you say that's really the secret to having men share their feelings, to really create a space to that's safe for them to tell the truth, and that honesty is really what creates intimacy, as opposed to, you know, trying to get the answer that you want.
Yeah, or get the behavior that you want, right?
Right.
So demanding that a guy call you, and if not, he's punished, isn't going to give you any more understanding of how and why he might not be calling. But if you can have that sense of trust and that openness in your communication that will let you talk about that, his reasons for my calling, for not calling, might even fall away. And he'll say, you know what, well, I haven't trusted that I'm ready for a relationship, and maybe I had a relationship in my past that, you know, I felt this way or that way, but I don't feel that way with you now that we're talking about it. And, you know, I apologize for not calling, and I'd love to call you more, especially if that's going to make you feel great and happy. So I would say that's a big part of the secret, absolutely.
One of the things I wanted to ask you that I know you talk about is, how does one make your relationship affair-proof?
Well, I would say that the biggest key to that is if you have a, what I would call a sex-positive level of communication. And by sex-positive, this is a word I've actually borrowed from a friend of mine, Kira, and she actually works with people who've had certain sexual abuse in their lives, and she also works with people who have been struggling through things like being people who've had infidelity in their relationships, either having happened to them or being people who've done that to their partner. And one of the common areas that I see around people is if you can have a conversation about sex and honesty about what your sex life is, how you live sexually, who you are sexually, and not feel a level of shame with your partner, there's a whole other area of honesty and of comfort and trust that can be developed if you can move past the usual, well, let's keep your sexuality in a box and let's keep mine in a box, and therefore we'll have a safe relationship. There's actually the ability to have a very positive, open conversation about sexuality that at first, when you haven't had it, can feel very threatening. But once you start to have that dialogue, is very real. And I know from my own experiences in long-term relationships, and I know from my friends' experiences in long-term marriages, that eventually, let's call it after 5 years, or after 10 years, or 15 years, you're able to drop this, I would say, I don't want to call it a facade, but this lack of comfort or this shame or hiding around sexuality, and you start to have a deeper dialogue about what sex is and honesty around sex. And so the most direct example I can give you is for a lot of men, and I'll stereotype here, but I think it's one that a lot of us understand, men can be very sexual and have interest in other partners. That doesn't mean they should act on it, but to have a level of honesty in your relationship, if a man can actually say to you, you know what, here's who I am sexually, and I might have these desires that might be threatening to a relationship, but I choose not to act on them because of our love. Simply the space for a man to share that he might have desire dissipates that desire significantly. And more importantly, it makes him feel more understood and accepted for who he is as a human being and as a man. And that builds fidelity in a man's mind. That level of trust and of being seen and understood is irreplaceable. And the reason is because a lot of women can't or won't have that conversation with a man and understand him on that level. And the reason is because it's a threat to a lot of committed relationships. But if you can have that level of dialogue for both of you and share who you really are sexually and remove that level of shame or questioning, that is constantly there in a lot of relationships and a sense of worry, you've created another level of security and of honesty in your relationship that a lot of other, in fact, most of the relationships don't have. And that's very, very powerful.
Mm. So since we're talking about sex, when, in your opinion, is it okay to begin having sex when you're dating?
Well, it depends what you want. Look, I believe I'm not the kind of man who sees women as the ones who should have a certain purity and not enjoy themselves sexually, while men, it's okay to date and to have sex and to not have to worry about that image of purity and whatever. So if you're a woman and you're clear that you have sexual needs, I think it's important to be in touch with those and to find a way, if you haven't met that right person, to feel comfortable if you find that level of comfort or desire in your life, to have a lover. Because it can be very helpful for you if you're not finding that soulmate or that one partner, to have your needs and enjoyment met. But for a lot of women who don't know how to do that, it's a road towards confusion, meaning that they think they could have a lover and have sexual enjoyment and date and have a connection with a man and it not need to go anywhere any farther if they thought they don't want it to or it doesn't seem like the right person at first. But they get hooked in anyways because having sex bonds them to that man. So with certain women, and I can't give a rule here because I believe that some women are capable of having that space in their lives to have a lover who they know isn't going to make a great partner, but they can share part of their life and be sexual with if they choose to in a mature, healthy way. And other women aren't as capable of that because they're going to get emotionally hooked and bonded to that person anytime they would be around them and be more sexually involved. So that's the sexual side of dating. I also want to say on the social or emotional side that I think it's valuable for a woman to date and to know different men and to experience the feeling, the idea that she has options. Because if you have options, you're much more likely to, if you come across a partner who doesn't seem like what you want or is showing you behavior that would indicate that he wouldn't make a great partner for you, if you believe that you have options or there's abundance in your life or that you do have the ability to attract a better or the right or your soulmate, then you're much less likely to be caught up in a relationship trying to make what isn't really working work. So options can be really helpful. And not only that, I know so many women who have dated or been out on the world, and because they're dating, they're more social and they get out more, and then they end up meeting that right person for them because they're in this quote-unquote dating mode where they're out and a little bit more social, and then they do meet that right soulmate. So I think that the idea of dating for a lot of women sounds terrible because they have the belief that they're going to have all these shallow dates. Sometimes sex is hard to handle. But the important thing is to start to get in touch with who you are and what you can handle, whether that's no sex at all, whether that's some sex, and what those boundaries are for you, and then find a way to make that healthy and fun and allow it to expand your life, not make it difficult. And that takes some exploring for what your own personal boundaries are. So I can't personally give a rule for that because I know that all women feel differently around these things.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Christian. And just finally, how do you know when you've met the right person? This is something we hear often.
That's such a great question. I believe it's part intuition and part faith. And having that level of intuition and feeling that love, I think that becomes a choice, too. Do I follow that down the rabbit hole and really allow myself to grow more deeply in love and to open myself and, quote-unquote, be vulnerable with this person and share my life fully? So if you have someone who not only gives you that intuitive hit whenever you see them and you're around them, if they truly, in a way that you can tell, see you and bring out some of your highest self, whether that's that you're a more loving person, a more joyful person, and that they support you in being your highest and best self and see you for that, that's absolutely what I would say is your soulmate. Why? Because they're calling your soul to a higher place, not just so that you can love them. That's not a soulmate. It's not about a man having a woman as a partner so that the man could be more powerful or feel more loved. A man should have a woman as a partner who would be a soulmate because he can give her a foundation to where she can grow and blossom even more and be a more joyful and larger person in the world, however she chooses to do that. And if you have that feeling that you have that foundation and you have that knock of, wow, I feel this calling to love and to my highest self with this person, and they really see me, that's beautiful and special and rare. And I really think it then becomes a question of faith. Do you have the courage to follow that and to live your life in a way to dedicate yourself to love and commit yourself to love? Because a commitment in a relationship, like I said earlier, I don't think the most important thing is, well, I commit to just being in this relationship and we're monogamous. I think the most important commitment you make is the commitment to choose to love your partner, even when those situations come up where you're not inspired to love. That's the important choices of love. So it's also a matter of faith, I believe, that you have faith that you're willing to commit yourself on that level to this person and that they will make good on that with you as well, that they're trustworthy and that you feel comfortable giving them that level of faith in your life.
Thank you so much. It's so helpful and inspiring. And Christian, it's just been an absolute pleasure and delight to have you with us today. And I'm wondering if you can share where people can go to find out more about your work and what you're up to now, what you're most excited about, and what's coming up next for you.
Sure. Well, you can find me on the web very easily at catchhimandkeephim.com. And there you can, first of all, sign up and read my free newsletter, which I send out, which has all kinds of great tips on everything from commitment with men to attraction to some of the most common mistakes that women make, both in dating and relationships, that cause men to withdraw or pull away or for relationships to fall apart. And then there you can also find my entire product catalog. So I have an ebook, Catch 'Em and Keep 'Em, that you can download. And then I also have several CD or DVD programs that I've really spent years putting together and cover such a great variety of topics from commitment, attraction. I have one that's all about inside the mind of men, how men experience relationships and dating, how they feel. What are the common things that men say that a lot of women misunderstand? So I have a whole variety of programs there, about 9 other programs that you could get as well. So feel free. I would really encourage you to reach out to find that information. A lot of it's free for you if you just go to my site, and I'd love to hear from you. And then one of my favorite things is if you do sign up or you do try one of my programs, write me a success story. I want to know what happens. How did you put this to use in your life? And share that with me, because that's really the thing at this stage that really makes the work really interesting for me, is that it gets into people's lives and it affects their level of consciousness and the quality of relationships they have. And that's, I think, if anything, my purpose and where I'm headed is I'm interested in helping evolve people and myself evolving at the same time to a higher level of awareness just around love and how we treat each other in our lives. So I guess that would sum it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. And any final words for our listeners on how they can find their soulmate?
Find joy and love in your life, and it will show up in all kinds of beautiful ways in return.
Thank you, Christian.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Ultimate Soulmate Summit, brought to you by The Soulmate Secret and the Calling in the One online course. For more information about how you can download the audios in this series or order the CD set and companion workbook, please visit soulmateaudios.com. Again, that's soulmateaudios.com. On behalf of Arielle Ford, Claire Zammit, and our event partners, we want to thank you again for participating in this series and send you much love and support on your journey to manifesting your soulmate.